When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Oh, baby. Welcome back to Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Kyle Sconowill, and my longtime friend, ironically, from work, Robbie Earle. Robbie, I am taking the best possible energy into a podcast episode that one can take. And I don't know if it's the timing. I don't know if it's because, weirdly, you and I haven't done this setup for a long time. A little bit of scheduling. Like, we did a bunch of the episodes when I was in Iowa, pre-Banktum, literally probably a month ago. And then we recorded a bunch together in Austin. And it just feels like setting up all my stuff again. It has been probably, no joke, 5 or 6 weeks since we sat down and just had a conversation like this. So that's kind of fun.
It's funny because we record this on Riverside, and for whatever reason, I don't know if it does this on your end, right before it clicks in with my live camera feed, it will show me like it freezes on like the last thing that it recorded, like the last time that I did a Riverside session. Mm-hmm. It's only for like a split second, but it's always telling how long ago it was. Like, I can tell what I was wearing, and if it's like a Saturday recording session, I can always tell because I'm like only presentable from the waist up.
Yeah. I'm wearing athletic shorts down here too, just FYI. Dude, how is everybody doing? What a massive 10-day, 14-day stretch it's been, not just for us, but the entire Marvel community. Dude, maybe the biggest stretch in terms of just generic news and stuff coming out that I don't want to say ever, but maybe ever on this podcast, because we've only been doing this since Endgame. What do I mean by that? First of all, like, thank you to Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts. Literally, this is insane for us.
Yeah.
Right now, if you go to the front page of either platform, our podcast is on the front. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I said this on Instagram, but what's so cool about that, and shout out to those companies specifically helping us, is that almost every other podcast that gets those spots, they have a parent company. They have a Crooked Media, a comicbook.com, an NPR, something, Dateline, NBC. Right. They have some backing company. We don't, dude. We are indie. It is you, me, and Pete, and some help from Candace. And, it's just like, it's so cool that they take the time to put us on the front page when that's the case. It's unbelievable for us.
I was so excited because I realized, and this is a nerdy thing, but I don't know that we had ever gotten in the new and noteworthy category on Apple Podcasts. I don't know by what metric we're new, but it's cool that we're noteworthy.
I think the noteworthy part is maybe the episode is new. Yeah. And under on Spotify, we're under Let's Talk About Movies. Please. Let's talk about movies.
I love that. That's my favorite thing to do.
So here's the thing. If you are one of those new people that are now finding this podcast because of that, not only do we have 300 plus episodes that you can go back and catch up on, we went through the entire Infinity Saga, sometimes twice. We've referenced some of those tentpole films so many times. And then most recently, really did a lot of fun stuff leading up to Deadpool and Wolverine, which I actually just saw for a second time last night with Annika for her first time.
Nice. I saw it a second time as well.
Which we'll have to get into at some other time because I don't want to spoil it. It's only been a week or so for some people. Geez. So,
which is crazy.
Yep. So that movie came out. It's smashing records. That's part of the news. Comic-Con happened and a bunch of stuff dropped there. Then we had this kind of stuff happen to us and I was traveling and here we are. Like, what a massive week. So that's all a huge setup to say we're going to work today's episode in reverse. Because of all the craziness, you and I have not talked about the biggest bombshell in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a few years, as far as news goes.
Yeah.
And so here's what we're going to do today. We have a Substack, which is a free newsletter that one of our listeners and longtime friend, Greg, writes weekly for people. And it's the best way to keep up with news because he's really good at filtering stuff and putting it in like a very consumable short newsletter only once a week. And I thought it was so good that I'm going to go through it right now live. And that's going to kind of be the structure of our episode today.
That is perfect. And that kind of dovetails with what I wanted to say to folks that are finding us for the first time or that are coming back after a while, if you're suddenly finding yourself extra interested in the MCU. We started this podcast way back because we just loved the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You and I have been friends. It was something that we liked to talk about, and we just wanted to go through all the movies because primarily we felt like at the time they were either underappreciated or maybe it just seemed like there was too high of a barrier of entry for people that maybe weren't superhero nerds. And our thought was that these movies are actually just objectively great. You don't have to be a superhero nerd to enjoy them. And so we've had a lot of fun introducing people over the years to what we love about these movies. And I think what I love about this Substack is that it can kind of do the same thing. Like, I think that if you're trying to follow the news on all this stuff sometimes, especially if you're on social media, it is super confusing because there's stuff that's like, especially now, there are Photoshop things that aren't real and there are things that are taken out of context. And sometimes it's a rumor and it's not really even anything, but everyone's all getting all flustered about it. So I really have appreciated for myself, and I think our listeners have appreciated having this place where, like, every week, if you're just curious what's going on with the MCU, but also with kind of film and TV news in general, this is a really great resource. So I'm super thankful to Greg. And this was such an excellent post, kind of wrapping up a really overwhelming weekend. So I think it's a perfect way to talk about it.
On that note as well, you know, we've never really been a crazy, newsy, hot takey type podcast here. We are a community discussion podcast. And that means everyone can be involved. And so truly what I think makes us different is that this is a safe space for all opinions. And this first bit of news was weirdly, or maybe not weirdly, but surprisingly to some, met with some mixed reactions. And as I was going through our Discord channel and seeing some of our listeners so stoked and some of our listeners very confused and others like hesitant or cautiously optimistic, I realized, man, this is one of those things where every viewpoint is represented here in Friends From Work. And that is okay. Like, I'm not here to tell you why you're wrong if you're not excited about this news. This is, today's episode specifically, is going to be a discussion between you and I about how you feel about it. And so all viewpoints are welcome. We're going to stay calm here. The news we are referencing. Comic-Con happened, Hall H, San Diego. And the first thing is that the Russo brothers were announced officially that they are going to be directing the next two Avengers films. We're going to get into their side of this in a second, a little more. But part of that is they've changed the I guess it'd be Avengers 5 to be Avengers Doomsday, and they're going to be doing Doctor Doom. Probably not as much Kang as originally thought. Mm-hmm. And with that, they made a big announcement of who's going to play Doctor Doom. It's got to be the best actor in the world to be able to do it. There were a lot of rumors of who it'd be, and I never once personally thought it would be the person it was. Robert Downey Jr. That's right. You heard me right. Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark. It blows Robbie away. Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark is going to be back in the MCU as Doctor Doom. To which I will say, if you haven't seen the actual video, have you, Robbie, of the announcement?
I have not seen the video. I've seen a lot of photos.
Please go watch the video, just because, if nothing else, it's crazy exciting just to hear the reaction from the crowd. I'll let you kind of go first. Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr.'s face behind a mask, is now back in the MCU. I have so many thoughts personally. I want to hear what you think.
I was very, like, I was kind of blown away when I saw this. Sorry, my screen on the background here is popping on and off. It's like calling me to it's like, you're talking about movies? Why don't you just watch?
Turn it on.
Come on. I was blown away. I was not expecting that at all. I was expecting something crazy and for them to announce. I like the Doctor Doom piece of it is not as surprising to me, but like the RDJ part, I think was just crazy because I'm trying to figure out the timing of that. Like I know recently he's been saying in interviews that, you know, Tony Stark is such a part of him. And so people have asked, would you ever return? And he was like, you know, I would never close that door. And I'm curious, like, is that something that he's been thinking about for, like, how long has this been in the works? Like, is this something that happened right around the time that they started talking to the Russos? Like, is this a post him going through the just sweeping award season for Oppenheimer? Like, there's some level where I'm wondering, like, for so long, it's not that he had a chip on his shoulder, but there was kind of this weird thing where Robert Downey Jr. has his entire career, like really from the first movies he was making, been known as a once in a generation talent. And you go back and you read these reviews and these interviews, like the only reason why he did not skyrocket to like the top of A-list
immediately
was because of his drug problems and just general personal issues. And he was kind of in and out of various facilities and eventually became so much of a liability that directors wouldn't hire him until you got to the Jon Favreau, Iron Man, you know, David Fincher should also get some credit for Zodiac, which we talked about not that long ago. But anyway, I think that like because of all that, you know, he's never won his Oscar, but he's always been known as someone that very much deserves it. And then he's turned in, you know, this decade of incredible performances as a superhero, but also, like, which I think nobody else in the history of cinema has ever done, has held down a franchise that is it's like massively, not only massive in the number of entries that he was involved in, but just massive in its success critically, commercially. Like, so it's like he did that. And then he got to go do Oppenheimer and he got so much acclaim for that, won everything that he could win.
Which is funny because with how big the MCU is, you almost say that implying like, well, then he got to go do the small art house film. But it's right, like, right. It's like he went to go do a Nolan movie, which still almost got $1 billion. So it's not like that's the quick little A24 film that he did, you know?
Right. No, but yeah, I mean, but it is funny how, like sometimes it's, you know, it's like whenever Leo finally won for The Revenant, it's like people are looking for an excuse to finally give these people their due. And it's like, I still think there's a case to be made that RDJ deserved an Oscar just as much for some of his Marvel performances for sure, as he did for Oppenheimer. But I wonder if now that he feels fully like he's done so many different things. He's done them all very well. And now he just kind of, he had fun at Marvel and he wants to come back. And that part of it makes me really happy because I think that there is a lot of like RDJ in the core DNA of Marvel. And I think people have been feeling a lack of that, that you just, there's no way around.
Let's go pros and cons. I think that's the biggest pro for me. I know he's getting paid a ton of money. Okay. So money talks. I get that. But here's a guy that really doesn't need any more money. He's later in his life. Why would he want to do it? if I could have a sit down interview with him, that'd be my question. Why even get involved with Dr. Doom? Like, you could either just retire or you could just do some small indie films. And so he must know something. It's not only that he must trust Kevin and the Russo brothers. He must know a little bit of what the story's going to be. And if I know the money talks, but if it's compelling enough to make him come back, that's a positive for me. Like, he is a guy that wouldn't just want to be involved just because, is my point.
No, and I think, like, part of why I was going through all that is I think he fought so hard to not prove himself, but, like, you got the sense that he really wanted to show everyone that he was not just Tony Stark, that he could get out and it's like, I don't think he would do that and then risk tarnishing his legacy, both with Marvel and in general. I mean, because that's the thing, like, it's not just that he's coming off of this Oppenheimer win. It's that he's coming off of his Endgame win, which was very much a Robert Downey Jr. thing. Like, I think when people think of that movie, I mean, there's so much that movie does really well, but the lasting moment there is the final Tony Stark scene. And you can't really imagine a better send-off. So I think you're right. I don't think any amount of money would be worth it to risk, like, even like smudging that.
Right.
To me, like, for, I mean, it would be worth it for me personally.
It's the Will Ferrell with Elf thing. It's Jerry Seinfeld with Seinfeld. Right. I don't know if you've heard about that. You know, like, it's Michael Scott and Steve Carell. All these people that were offered absurd amounts of money to come back and reprise their roles, and they wouldn't do it because there's nothing they can do. There's nothing they can do to top what they already turned in. I feel like there's got to be a little bit of that with him. And he's not coming back as Tony Stark, but there has to have been something that was said to him or, like, pitched to him. And so that ties into my second pro, which is that the Russo brothers from day one have said their favorite story is Secret Wars, and they would not come back unless it was Secret Wars. And then since the announcement, I'm sure you follow them on Instagram. They're so stoked. I mean, they're like, we've missed you. Like, and I get that. They haven't gone on to make award-winning films since. They've made the biggest movie of all time, some of the biggest movies of all time. I understand them wanting to come back, but the fact that they're stoked and whatever they've pitched to Robert has gotten him stoked enough to want to do it later in his life with money not even needing to be a factor in his life anymore. The fact that Kevin okayed all of that, what that means to me is there is going to be a level of excellence to it. Like, the floor now of the movie in general is a 70%. Like, there's no way that they're going to let this movie be not excellent in all of the little details. Now, you may not still like the casting. You may think that it's weird to see Robert Downey Jr.'s face on something else. I get all of that, but I at least know that now it's going to be excellent in all of the details. And Silvestri's coming back to compose. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, which is huge.
You know what I mean, though? There's a floor now to it.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this. Actually, if you're just finding us again, we had an episode. It was our spoiler-free preview, or contained our spoiler-free preview of Deadpool and Wolverine.
Right. Last week.
So also, if you're listening to this and haven't seen the movie yet, which is very possible because it has it even been a full week since the movie like had its wide release?
No, that episode was last Monday, and then the movie was last Friday. So it's been like 10 days since it came out. But
By the way, keep track, go listen to
the episode, because we also nailed a couple of predictions in that episode, which is wild. I'll get to that more later.
Talked
about the Brave New World trailer and the Adamantium. I got that right. They came out.
True, you did. Yeah.
We talked about the Russo brothers. Yeah. Pretty much probably going to be the thing. That became true.
Yeah.
Anyways, keep going.
And so I say that because we talked about this a good bit there. So if you're curious about our thoughts on the Russos, you should go check that out so we don't repeat ourselves. Yeah. But I do think, you're exactly right. Like, watching through any of their MCU contributions, which were Captain America, the Winter Soldier, Captain America, Civil War, and then Infinity War and Endgame. Whatever you think about those movies, there are very few if any, moments that just don't work, like on any level, like moments that feel like misses. There are people that like there are people that don't like the Smart Hulk direction, the Fat Thor direction. Like, there are all these things that people can quibble with, but I think by and large,
yeah,
compared to really any other filmmaker within superhero movie history, except maybe Nolan,
like the least controversial movies ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like everybody, I mean, that's the thing. It's like whenever we come on and talk about like Winter Soldier, it's like, yeah, it's incredible. I don't know what else to say. It's pretty perfect. So on that level, plus the Silvestri level, the thing that I think adds to it, but I'm kind of curious about, is that they are bringing back one half of the writing team from all of those movies, but not the full writing team. And I'm kind of curious about,
Steven,
have you heard anything about why that is?
Okay, I've heard one rumor, and you know we don't like rumors on this podcast, but I'm going to share it, and I don't know if this is true. So don't let this incept ideas into your brain that aren't true. But sure. So Stephen McFeely is writing, but Christopher Marcus is not. I've just heard that there might be some personal stuff with his family that he's got to take care of, and that's all it is. Mm. Now, if that's not the case, but I think Christopher Marcus works at Agbo, which is the Russo brothers production company. So he's already there. Mm-hmm. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if he still contributed in some way. Like, maybe he's not announced right now, but he'll still be around and probably in and out of the room and stuff. But I had heard that like he's not officially announced because of some personal family issues. But again, he may be doing great and that has nothing to do with it. So I don't know. But yeah, it remains to be seen how much that affects it. Like, how much of the dynamic duo there is lost. That's a thing. For sure.
But like some of the things that we've discussed, especially in phase four, phase five, of these kind of like certain movies that in some ways have higher ceilings than a lot of movies in the Infinity Saga, but also have lower floors, even just within a particular film or you know, television series, that those weren't even around during the Infinity Saga. But I think that there's been a lot of talk about the level of quality control that Marvel has lost or was unable to maintain consistently over the last few years. And I think that because of that, that is a huge, huge pro, what you're saying. Like, that is I think that people are going to, if anything, it will revert back to the old school Marvel criticism of like, well, yeah, I mean, it's just a good movie, but like, that's all it is. It's not anything interesting.
You mean like people have been clamoring for that. Watch them get that and then be like, man, I wish they would let their directors take some swings and do something.
Yeah, I mean, just
different.
Like, come on, like just go for something, you know?
Exactly. Okay. So then this slightly falls into the con category, or maybe it's more of a question. You know this from me. I personally don't like the idea, and I'm not saying they're doing this, but I don't like the idea of bailing on what they've done. Like, I don't want them to bail on the Multiverse Saga. I didn't want them to bail on Kang. I'm not saying anything about Jonathan Majors' legal battle. I'm just saying the character of Kang, I didn't want the end of Quantumania to be the end for him. Like, I wanted them to keep building that up and let that be a thing. So that part of me gets a little bit bummed just in general. It's possible that he's not totally out of the film. Maybe he's not the focus, but it's possible that he's still a part of this somehow. Not Jonathan Majors probably, but Kang. But I don't, in general, I think my biggest hesitation would be kind of what you were hinting at. I really hope it's not a move of desperation. And I don't think it is. I hope it's not a, like, we need to get the band back together because what we've been doing hasn't working. I would much rather them take the approach like they do with Thor Dark World, cha-ching, get the reference, that like, if you feel like phase four and five were not totally the same quality standards, that Kevin and co would redeem it versus bailing on it. Like, let's not, I can't say this because there's spoilers, but you know the line I'm talking about in Deadpool and Wolverine. Like, I don't want it to be bailed on. And to the degree that that's what's happening, or at least that it's perceived that way, that's a con for me. Versus like, if they had marched out, you know, Killian Murphy and said Dr. Doom, I don't think it would have been perceived as, oh wow, Marvel's desperate and they're going back to their, you know, their roots.
Oh, for sure. Which I am. Yeah. Because again, we talk a lot within this community about the Russo brothers and coming back. But like we said a couple of weeks ago, I don't think that the vast majority of viewers are familiar enough with the writing and directing teams behind these various Marvel movies. So I don't think that the Russo announcement would have, like, in and of itself been seen as a running it back move. I think it is the RDJ addition. And I will say, like, my first reaction to the announcement was that they had picked the wrong Oppenheimer cast member, because I have really thought Cillian Murphy would be such a fun take on Doom.
And that he would have liked it. Like, this was his shot. He's always said he's open to the idea if the script is right. Like, this was the chance for the script to be right for him.
Yeah.
And Robert could have been like, dude, you need to do it, because you'd kill it. Yeah. And, you know, I had fun with it.
And it's, you know, again, it's like he is, you're going to hear this with any actor, that they are like, if they're good enough, you're not going to want to hide their face. It's why they came up with the way to show Tony in the suit from the very first movie. And I get that. But I do think that given that it's RDJ, I hope that they don't let RDJ overshadow the character that he's playing. I think that's one of my fears, is like, he is coming into this as such a force. So there's not only just the like sheer charisma of him as an actor, there's also the fact that he has left such an insane stamp on the MCU that, like, I think that the only way that they can do it, and I imagine the way that they will do it, is just by leaning into it. Like, I think that they will, like, my sense is that this is going to wind up being like a Tony Stark of maybe the Fantastic Four's universe.
That was going to be my question to you.
That's kind of how I see it playing out. Like, and because he doesn't take the heroic path that
the dark Tony
he
Stark
did in ours
of sorts.
Yeah, and then maybe Reed Richards in that universe kind of, and the Fantastic Four fill the Avengers void. And if that's the case, then I think that you could do some really interesting things there, because it's kind of like what we talked about in Deadpool and Wolverine. This is not a spoiler, but it's this idea of, you know, they're kind of just assuming that you're generally familiar with Wolverine's backstory, but they're not really nailing it to any specifics. So it's like, you just kind of assume that he got the adamantium the same way, that he kind of has the same general past, and you can then build on that without them feeling tied to it. And I could see them doing something like that with Tony Stark, where it's like, you come in with some understanding of who Howard Stark is, of maybe how Tony, like, maybe the same way that he had to get his armor is how he had to get the Doom armor, because he had a similar kind of accident, but instead of like having a wake up call in one direction, it was the other. And so you can kind of build off of a foundation that we're aware of. And I think that that could work. I think still, to me, some of the controversy that I expected among comic book fans is like, is it going to become too much of a gimmick, too much of this is a Tony Stark variant? And are you going to wind up kind of disappointing people that have really been looking forward to finally seeing Dr. Doom done right as a Fantastic Four villain?
Right, which is another hesitation / con for me. Yeah, just that. I guess what you're saying, could you have just done it with someone else from the get-go and not have any of this be a thing? Like, could you not have just had Dr. Doom be played by somebody else? It's not a Tony Stark variant. We've put the Tony Stark thing to bed. You know, I'm wearing my glasses on purpose. He's my favorite character. But
even in death.
Yeah. Could you let that just be, you know, and just totally start fresh versus even trying to tie it to it. And here's the thing. Yeah. My other con is that if you don't tie it to that, if you don't tie it to Tony Stark, then it's just a little bit, no matter how good he is at it, there's always going to be that Steve Carell, Michael Scott thing where when you see him in Foxcatcher, it's a little bit weird for diehard Office fans for a second, at least, because that face is not that face is not him. That face is Michael Scott. You know, like, no matter what, as soon as Doom's mask comes off, the first thought of my brain is going to be, that's Tony Stark. Like, what? Like, what are you doing?
Unless they go fully with the canonical Doctor Doom face scarring thing. You know, it's like in the comics, the whole reason he wears the mask is because he used to be this like really good looking guy, and then he has a lab accident, which was happening all the time in Stanley
comics.
So
many lab accidents.
Really need to work on lab everywhere. Safety. But his whole face is horribly disfigured, and so he wears this mask primarily out of vanity. And that is one way where it's like, I hope that Marvel...
Like give him the Penguin treatment, basically? Unrecognizable?
Yeah. I mean, like, because the thing is, if we learned nothing else from Oppenheimer, it was that when you take, you know, I remember, I think this is the way that he described it. He wanted all of his tricks taken away for that movie. Like he wanted to look older. He didn't want to be a character that got to talk fast and be charming. Like all of the things that we think of as like RDJ-isms, he wanted to not be able to use to kind of have to draw on something deeper. And I think that's one of the things that really impressed people there, is it was a great performance that, like, yes, you can recognize it's he's still using the same muscles, but it's much more restrained. You know, it's like a totally different. And I would like to see that happen here, where it's like, let's let him do something that's like weird and dark and grim and like almost like what you and I have always talked about loving with like James Spader's Ultron, like the way they kind of made that this dark Tony Stark.
There are no strings on me.
Like I think you could do some interesting things there. And I would love for them to feel comfortable like letting him be Dr. Doom and like not like I don't want to see. And this is just maybe the comic book nerd in me, but like, I just don't want to see a whole movie of him walking around and being Dr. Doom from the neck down and being Tony Stark from the neck up. Like, I want him, like, if they're going to do that, like, I hope that they lean into it.
Well, then let's wrap this discussion by coming back to my very original positive. I just really trust that Kevin, the Russo brothers, and Robert are having these conversations. Like, there's no way that they didn't think about this at all. Like, there's no way they just announced RDJ, like, without knowing something else. Because they've anticipated that some of the reaction was going to be mixed. So the only thing that gives me comfort on that front, like, if you are feeling hesitant, is that certainly they have a story in mind that's going to tie it all together and make it all make sense. I mean, it has to.
The beauty of it is from the moment that they introduced Secret Wars, I had several concerns. That's not even the right word. I had several questions about how they were going to pull off certain things because of some of the characters that we don't have in the MCU. Like, whether you're looking at the 2015 Jonathan Hickman Secret Wars or you're looking at the original Jim Shooter, Mike Zeck Secret Wars, they both rely very heavily on Dr. Doom as a character. And I remember thinking, man, that is when the Russos talk about loving Secret Wars, they are talking about loving a story that is heavily built around Dr. Doom. So I always thought, like, that's going to be a real bummer because that's such a great, iconic Dr. Doom story, both of them, that if we do Secret Wars, even if we do it so, so well with Kang or whoever else, there would always be a little part of me that thought, like, man, like I kind of would have liked to have gotten that with Dr. Doom.
Is there any scenario where Kang and Dr. Doom work together?
See, I don't even think it has to be that. Like, to me, the way that this can all connect is we talked recently, maybe offline, but about how that Quantumania end credits scene really kind of sets up the Kang variants as having built a multiversal network that I think is pretty similar to the one that Jonathan Hickman sets up in his Avengers story that culminates in Secret Wars. And, you know, you also know that there's supposed to be within the comics a connection between Kang and Reed Richards genetically. Like they are, like he's like a distant descendant of Reed Richards. So I'm thinking, like, if what I would like to see happen is that Doom is at least referenced in the Fantastic Four movie. Like, I would like to see the character introduced in some way there. I don't want him to be introduced fully in Doomsday. He might be, but I would like it more if he was introduced in the context of Fantastic Four.
And, I wonder if that's gonna happen, by the way. Keep going.
And then I think, like, if in doing that, you can then show, like, if he is familiar with Reed Richards, right? You can imagine, like, Doom is in the comics someone that he's always traveling through time, and he almost has kind of like a rivalry with Kang, in part because Kang is bound up in the Richards thing for a long time. There's a like Stan Lee actually played with the idea that maybe Kang was also a descendant of Dr. Doom. And so like they kind of went back and forth with that. And so it's like they are sort of like intertwined such that I think they don't have to drop the Kang stuff to introduce this as a new element that makes sense.
I don't understand the comic Secret Wars enough. I've never read it. I just have basically edited your episodes where you and Candace are talking about it. Do you think, if you had to make a prediction, like, what is this coming down to? Is this going to be a Fantastic Four universe versus a Fox universe versus 616? Is it 616 versus, what is it, 10005 versus whatever the Fantastic Four universe is? Is that what we're headed towards? Or are we headed toward, like, what motivation does Kang and or Doom have if they're not a part of one of those? Like, if they're able to travel, what motivation do they have to watching these universes fight? Or is it that somehow all three of those are going to come to the sacred timeline 616 before Secret Wars, and it's like all of them, Fantastic Four, Avengers, Wolverine, etc., versus Kang and Doom and Galactus or something, like, together? Is it like that, or is it that the universes are colliding because of incursions? Like, where are we headed? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that they've introduced incursions now, and they shouldn't walk that back. I've always thought that the thing that makes that a really interesting element is that it's sort of this force of nature rather than just a new villain. So I kind of don't want, like, I don't want Doom to be the one that's trying to make incursions happen.
Incursions happen naturally. Then what is his role in it? He's fine with them just happening?
Well, so that's my question. I could kind of see it going two ways. And you can skip like a minute ahead on the podcast if you don't want to hear me spoil some of the way that the comics work out. But
right now,
what they're going to do in the movies. So it doesn't matter there. But I think Doom has a really, really interesting role in both stories. The 80s Secret Wars, the whole premise is just all of these heroes and all these villains are plucked from Earth and put on a random battle planet to see who will win. And Doom is the one that basically he games the system enough to be the one that winds up with the most control. And something that I could totally see them doing in the movie, just because it's such an iconic moment, he finally uses this like all powerful, like these abilities that he's been given to fix his face. And so he takes his mask off. And so for the rest of Secret Wars, he like has this perfect face again. So I wonder, as an aside, if they do introduce him with the mangled face, and then if we go in a similar direction, but in the 2015 Secret Wars, it's even more interesting because he also doesn't cause the like what we would think of as the Secret Wars conflict. He's actually kind of on the side of the heroes all along the way of trying to prevent the incursions, because he doesn't benefit from every universe dying. Like, nobody does.
If you're back, skip another minute. Go ahead.
So Secret Wars, and this is actually probably fine from a spoiler perspective, the whole premise is all of these universes have now been eradicated, basically, and you're not left with any, and you're just left with like Dr. Doom at the very end. The only like the sacrifice play that he has left is that he's able to use the power he has to pull together these shattered fragments of various universes and merge them into one cohesive planet. And so it's like there's one universe left, and there's one planet Earth, and that's all that exists. And he makes himself the god king of that planet. So it's kind of like what he did was save people, but he did it in such a way that also makes him into this like dictator tyrant, which I mean, he always is anyway, because Dr. Doom is in the comics the leader of a country.
Well, and his name is Dr. Doom. Does Kang have anything to do with it?
Not really. Kang has more to do with the Avengers story and the incursions, but I still think that in this context, the way that they've introduced Kang, he's more like, I think that they're going to make him more of just a proxy for getting through different multiverses. And also maybe like we do know that Kang has caused incursions in the past because he's so obsessed with fighting other variants of himself and all these things, which are all things that I think would be beneath Dr. Doom. Like Dr. Doom wouldn't feel the need to go out and fight alternate versions of himself because he's got such this ego that he just assumes he's the best. Whereas Kang always kind of has stuff to prove and is always out there. So like there's a world where it would actually make more sense to me for it to still be Kang Dynasty, and then for Doom to kind of be the one that takes center stage in Secret Wars.
By the way,
the thing that's throwing me off is calling it Doomsday.
The fifth one, you mean?
Right.
Yeah. If they were following the comics, it would still be Kang Dynasty kind of thing. And then Doom would be like, this is all beneath me. Let's ramp this up. And there's one left kind of thing. Hey, there's a tiny bit of me, and this could sound, this sounds insane, but there's a tiny bit of me that thinks that they're still, like a year from now, going to have Jonathan Majors back in some role. Part of me thinks like, wow, he's been speaking.
I saw that quote from him.
He's been speaking about how heartbroken he is and that he loves Kang and wants to play Kang. And I am not commenting on abuse or the legal system at all. If I'm just making a prediction, there's a part of me that thinks that they're going to still work it in some, like a year from now, he'll have appealed and maybe some of that stuff dies down and he won't be the main focal point, but like kind of what you're saying could happen, or at least a few shots of like, here's what happened to him. And that's why this is not a thing anymore or whatever. How does the TVA and or like with the way the MCU has portrayed the TVA and now Loki's TVA, how does that factor in? That's outside of a universe technically. And like, I'm guessing they wouldn't like all these incursions, you know?
Yeah, which I mean, and they're trying to prevent those, right? Like, isn't that the whole point in hunting down Kang variants, is in part trying to prevent, like, that's their way of keeping the war from happening that he thought could only be prevented by having a He Who Remains.
Right, but then Doom is even more powerful and can let it happen, and
that's where I just... the other way I see this going, that it doesn't have to be either or, but in my brain right now, this is how they could follow the comics, and there are other things we haven't even talked about that we can get into in future speculation episodes. But
we've got a couple kind of years, like, for sure.
Right. The thing about the like the movies of it all, like I am still thinking, you know, we're recording this in the shadow of Deadpool and Wolverine, which has been a massive, massive success. And that movie does set forth some new ideas about like how the multiverse works and stuff. And so I'm wondering if Doomsday looks like the Fantastic Four going around and trying to get the strongest heroes from all these other universes to come and fight Dr. Doom because he has seized on some kind of multiversal weapon that's going to wipe everything out. And so like maybe they're going to like, maybe that's how it becomes an Avengers movie, is they're like, this is, we need whatever the good counter to this is. And you wind up with that, and you wind up with Wolverine and Spider-Man and whoever else from whatever franchise. That makes sense. That would feel a little bit like, that would be kind of a bummer to me, because it would just sort of feel like a giant like an excuse to get everybody on screen together. And that's what I don't want either of those movies to be. Mm. Like I think what makes the, like what made Infinity War especially so remarkable is that you had those moments of like, wow, it's Thor and the Guardians, but they never felt like, they never felt contrived. Like it never felt like cheap. It always, it made sense story-wise. It felt like it was earned with what we had gotten beforehand. It was never, as an audience member, I didn't feel pandered to. Like they were like, okay, there you go. Like now you get your little heroes hanging out together. And I'm just, I know that everyone's talked about how exciting it would be to see certain people together in those final Avengers movies. But I think the reason I'm ultimately skewing positive with all this news is I think that all the people that have now been announced that are attached to these two, they've shown us that they can do that.
For sure.
They've shown us that they care more about good stories than about fan service. And so I just want to make sure we get that part of what the Russos and what McFeely and RDJ have always done really well, and that we don't get like I don't want like two movies of like all of the women heroes joining together in the endgame battle. Like it's like a nice moment.
Wow, you sexist.
No, but here's the thing. It's a nice moment that like the Russos themselves recognize was indulgent. And it is. It's like, it's a moment where it's great because of what it is, but it doesn't really make sense from a story perspective. Like,
right.
It's clearly like they're sort of pulling you a little bit out of the story itself to kind of be like, look, this is pretty cool. And I don't want them to, like, as we're getting more and more meta within the MCU, I don't want them to get too, I don't know, to like let this balloon into something that loses sight of like what makes the entire franchise work.
For sure. Okay, here's how I want to wrap today's episode. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we can fly through some more of the announcements that came out. Obviously, those were the bombshell announcements, so that's why I took up the majority of the episode. But there's still, believe it or not, some more stuff that we got to get into briefly after a quick word from these sponsors.
Before we jump back in, I also have been so happy to see folks going over and shopping at Organic Price Books.
Oh, yeah.
That is our comics partner here, and we've loved working with them. This is it's so fun when this stuff finally works out. For the longest time, we were looking for people that were local, that we could support, and people that we thought we would be on the same page with, literally. And that is Organic Price Books. Mm. So if you are interested in any of the comics that we were just talking about, we have actually been going through the Jonathan Hickman Avengers series.
True.
Which is definitely what they're already pulling from it. So whatever happens with these two new Avengers movies, they've already set a lot of this stuff up. And to your point earlier, I don't think that Marvel's is in the business of undoing things. Like that seems antithetical to Kevin's whole approach. So I think we are going to have incursions. We're going to have that stuff. Those books that we've been talking about on our Patreon are all available at organicpricebooks.com. You will get them cheaper than you will get them anywhere else. And they will package them up all protected and nice.
Yes.
And then you'll get them and you're not going to have dinged up corners and scratch covers and things that can be kind of annoying if you're paying for a nice hardcover book. This is one that we've talked about before. This is the Grant Morrison New X-Men omnibus that they sent me when we were going through X-Men 97. It's relevant again because this is the comic that introduces Cassandra Nova, who is the main villain in Deadpool and Wolverine. There's also, I think, been a lot of buzz around a couple of books since Comic-Con. One is the infamous Iron Man.
Yep.
Which is a story where Dr. Doom, in that story, Iron Man essentially dies and Dr. Doom takes over as kind of his version of Iron Man for a while, which is obviously kind of relevant now. And then also the Uncanny X-Force by Rick Remender and Jerome Pena. Jerome is the one that kicks off the Avengers art on that Hickman saga, and some of my favorite art. And he and Remender work together a lot, and they're the ones that are doing that X-Force book, which features Wolverine and Deadpool and some of the other characters that we are talking about today and that appear in that movie. So there are a lot of comics that you can buy, and when you do, you should use code FRIENDSFROMWORK because you'll get even more of a discount.
All one word.
And they know that we sent you, and it just makes us happy.
All one word. Friends from work, all one word. Have you been a part
of a
team?
Kyle's shirt.
Do you have any Do you have any team experience? Well, I do. X-Force. They all died, but you know, some people thought it was gravity, but you know, The last bit of scheduling before we finish this news that I want to share is that we have an exciting announcement. Twofold. Robbie and I are going on a little bit of a summer break. Yay! Exciting announcement. We have been doing so much content leading up to Deadpool and Wolverine that we always kind of circled this little gap in August before Agatha starts in the middle of September as a time for us to take a little bit of a break. But it's exciting news because you and I just wrapped a like 3-month journey of going through all of the X-Men films in preparation for Deadpool and Wolverine over on Friends from Work Plus, which is our bonus content feed. You can check it out anywhere on Apple, Spotify, Substack, and Patreon. And you can subscribe to that if you would like. But we had so much fun doing that. And obviously it became very relevant for Deadpool and Wolverine. And so we wanted to share those episodes with our patrons' permission on the main feed. So even though you and I are going on a little bit of a break and maybe only checking in once or twice during this time over on the main feed, you're actually going to be getting, I think, 2 to 3 episodes a week of our X-Men coverage. So if you now, having watched Deadpool and Wolverine, want to go back through the X-Men rewatch, not only can you listen to our episodes about it, you could do the rewatch yourself and watch it. So it's going to be really fun. If you hear on those episodes us referencing Friends from Work Plusers, that's why, okay? But the episodes themselves, I would almost encourage people to try the universe rewatch just because it was so refreshing for me having not seen a lot of it. And we had some pretty surprising takes coming out of it. And so if you want to get a refresher on that, August is going to be a perfect time. Again, look for 2 to 3 episodes on the main feed. I wanted to say that before we wrap with some news. Okay, really briefly here, I'm going to go through Greg's newsletter. I saw this earlier and I love it. The Newton brothers, who scored X-Men 97, are going to officially be doing the music for next year's Daredevil Born Again.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually a pretty good fit.
It is a good fit. There's a little part of me that's sad, but I'm very happy about the choice. I'm just a little bit sad that we're not getting John Pazano.
John, shout out John.
Back, but
friend of the pod, true friend of the pod. Multi-time friend of the pod.
True, although, but yeah, the Newton brothers are also friends of the pod. And,
yes, correct.
And that's a good reason to bring him back, which we talked about wanting to do.
And I do think they did a great job with X-Men 97, but with their horror music background, the way they mix in synths and some of that stuff, I could see it absolutely slaying for a darker toned Daredevil. And kind of a modern sounding Daredevil. Deadpool and Wolverine, to no surprise of anyone, is absolutely smashing projections and smashing records. It has a 98% audience score. It has a cinema score of an A. And I went a second time and we loved it. Like, my wife loved it. And that is not typically her movie. She did not love the first two, but she loved it. Again, she got to see... spoiler here, she got to see Hugh Jackman shirtless, so that was a huge positive for her.
I was curious. I didn't know that you had seen it again. Something you and I had talked about after that movie is how it would hold up on a rewatch just because of how like cameo surprise heavy it is.
Well, so I can't fully dive into that. I was debating that while you were talking, if I was going to say that. I can't fully dive into some of those things, But what I can say is I need another watch because it held up magnificently well, but I can't tell if that's because I was living vicariously through Annika, which I love to do. Like I was almost feeling like I hadn't seen it just because.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and same. I went and saw it with Candace and she had a blast. And so,
then you had a blast.
It was as good. Like it was every bit as good as it was the first time I saw it.
But it's about to cross $1 billion. If not already it has, which is crazy. And I think it was like the eighth highest opening weekend ever and the highest opening weekend for an R-rated movie. So check off your bold prediction being correct when we did that all the way back in January. So no surprise, it's absolutely ripping. And the MCU fan in me just loves that. I'm not going to lie. I know it's not, we try not to treat Marvel like a sports team, but it is just kind of fun when the buzz is back. Like when that intro music starts, I just felt it again. It was working. So I love the buzz. We got a little bit of a clip or a reference to adamantium coming from. I'm just gonna say it. I'm gonna toot my own horn here. Coming from the celestial head from the Eternals that has partially surfaced in the ocean. It's in one shot of the trailer for Captain America: Brave New World, and they confirm that is going to be a source of adamantium, which is what makes them so freaking good. That's why I thought it would happen, because it's just too logical. Like if you said adamantium was actually around all this time or they just discovered it, that's kind of lame because we've done all these movies and no one's ever mentioned it. But to be like, hey, it's not in the MCU is a little lame because there's no shout outs then to like what Wolverine had or anything. But what a genius way to call back to how like in Guardians of the Galaxy, they're mining minerals from a celestial head to then be like, that makes sense that it would contain this metal they had never discovered. So genius.
Yeah. And now it's like if you have Wolverine claws and you have Cap's shield, which wins?
We don't know. Yeah.
Do the claws go through the shield?
We don't know. I kind of love that. I don't know. I'm okay with that.
I know. No, I do too. And I do think that sort of plays into what Feige was saying ahead of Deadpool and Wolverine about us entering a phase where each movie will be introducing mutants. Because I almost think that the Deadpool and Wolverine part of that is ultimately going to be a kind of a red herring. Like I think that they are still, like they have been slowly introducing with Ms. Marvel, with Wakanda Forever, and now with this, like these elements of the X-Men universe. And so that makes me think even more that they are going to organically like build up to mutants that are not coming over from the multiverse.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. The people in attendance at Comic-Con got to see a little shot from Thunderbolts. And in this said shot, it showed Val in the former Avengers Tower. So the rumor there is she the one that bought it, or like that organization is who bought it? Question
mark? I mean, that's certainly, that is talking about like bold predictions. You and I in like 2020 or 2021, like pre-WandaVision, we're talking about how fun it would be if we saw a Dark Avengers storyline where it's like you have them working out of Avengers Tower, and like that is like Thunderbolts is a thing, is a separate kind of supervillain team, but I like that they're skewing a little bit towards the Dark Avengers side of it. That makes me, I feel like that there's such an opportunity there, and so I'm glad that they're utilizing it.
The Fantastic Four cast was on stage, and I found it interesting for so many reasons, but one of which is they haven't actually filmed anything yet. So it was just kind of wild to see them there talking about their experience and stuff, and they haven't really started the actual shooting. But it did get me really excited, and like, I guess it warmed my heart to just watch Vanessa Kirby and Pedro Pascal specifically and how they interacted. They did a lot of joint interviews, and just listening to them talk about it with the news that Michael Giacchino is going to be doing the score for Fantastic Four, which is perfect. That's what I was going to say. It's so perfect because we've said this from day one the thing that he does best, more than like the epic dark, the thing that he does best is the sincere, like piano driven, like up sounding thing, which I think would work perfectly for the '60s.
Yeah.
Perfect.
No, it's I think, and I mean, don't get me wrong, the Batman
for sure,
Planet of the Apes, incredible stuff there. That is dark and heavy and epic. But no, you're right. I mean, there's a reason, like he, setting aside like all the Marvel and Star Wars and everything else, like I think a lot of people would still say that his Pixar work is some of his most iconic. He just, that's the, he can do the kind of optimism that I want that movie to exude.
But, you know, listening to Pedro Pascal talk, Vanessa Kirby, Harrison Ford, help me on the name, the guy who's going to play the leader.
Tim Blake Nelson.
All those people were talking this weekend, and that's my final point of like my final bit of news. It just really made me happy. Like part of the reason the excitement built the way it did, or at least something that added to the excitement, it's just fun to see these A-listers include Robert Downey Jr. in that wanting to be a part of the MCU, asking to be in it. So like Harrison Ford, who famously is grumpy, probably doesn't know anything about what universe he's in. I don't expect him to know anything about any of this. Had some quotes about adamantium, to which Kevin Feige said, like, this is my nerd dreams coming true. Like Harrison Ford's talking about adamantium, but he seemed genuinely excited. I don't know if you saw him doing like his Red Hulk.
No.
He like hulked out on stage, which is like he's embracing it, which again is pretty rare. Like you've seen the way he talks about Han Solo, for example.
It does. That makes you, that whole, this whole weekend made me think about like way back when they first introduced Loki and Tom Hiddleston came out and did his like, there is that kind of electricity for the first time in a long time.
That's right. That's why you need to watch some of the videos. His exact quote, Harrison Ford's, was, I saw a lot of my incredibly talented actor friends being a part of the MCU, and I thought, I want to be a part of that. It's something like that, where it's like, that's so dope to me. Or they were all having fun with it, and I wanted to be a part of that. Like, they were all having fun. So, obviously, RDJ is saying anything is like, wow, he wants to be back. Listen to Vanessa Kirby and Pedro Pascal talk about how excited they are to do this, and just even in the pre-production, the connection they've felt, and the fact that they're even there in the first place with a flying car, by the way. I don't know if you saw that making its entrance.
Yeah.
And then Tim Blake Nelson, if I'm saying that right, Tim Blake Nelson,
I thought you was a toad.
He was asked about, well, are you worried about, you know, Marvel Studios being the death of cinema? And of course he was asked that. And he was like, I actually think in so many ways they're saving cinema. And quotes like that just add to the buzz for me. So that's my final bit of news.
Yeah.
It made me happy.
No, I mean, certainly right now, I mean, the whole conversation this summer has been the movies that have underperformed. Now there have been a couple that, like, I think Twister's overperformed.
And Inside Out 2 is smashing records.
Yes, that's right. But then there were some, like, and not just The Fall Guy, I think Planet of the Apes fell in that category as well. There's another one that I'm... Furiosa.
Yeah, for sure, Furiosa, yeah.
But no, I love seeing that. And one thing that I also love with Captain America, and to kind of, like, wrap up this entire conversation... I think it's important, that adamantium announcement, because that is like, that is a sign of exactly what we were just talking about. Like, they are not like, if there was any movie that Marvel would be able to run away from right now, it would be Eternals. Like, nothing else has touched on it hardly at all. There were like one or two references, throwaway references in other shows.
Good point.
But if they wanted to just like excise that, there's a way they could do it. Like, no one is really, like, I would actually be interested in seeing some of those storylines be followed up on. But I think by and large, no one is clamoring for the Eternals sequel. But I love that they are intentionally making it not just like a part of the new Captain America movie, but even including it in little trailers and spots. So it's like, I think that as much as anything else is a sign that I don't think that they walk back Kang or anything else. I think that they are going to stay true to not just the MCU DNA, but the Marvel comics DNA, which is everything matters. It happens, it happened. Like, it's now, it is continuity, and you figure out how to work with it, and maybe you can find some retcon things, but there's going to be an in-universe explanation. You don't quit. Like, that's just you use it as a challenge to do something more creative, which is like what they did with Thor the Dark World.
And what we love.
And yeah, exactly. So it's like, that to me was one of the nice little just reassuring. They're not, I don't think that they're ashamed of anything that they've made. I don't think that they need to be, but I also think that like they're clear-eyed enough to know that people need something else to get more excited about. But I think that they're still respectful enough of the people that worked on those movies and shows to not dismiss them.
If you remember, they were, quote, shocked that Eternals didn't do well. Like, they were so proud of it that they were like, how could people not like this? So I'm with you. And look, they don't call us the Thor, the Dark World podcast for nothing, right? Like,
true.
Come on. That goes all the way back.
We really should have talked about it more this episode than we did.
Which, again, if you're just finding this podcast, that goes all the way back to 2019 when we were rewatching the MCU and we got to Thor the Dark World. We were like, wait a second, this is not as bad as people always say it is. And I remember it is. Okay, so thank you guys. This has been so much fun. Like I said, lots of housekeeping things here. You'll be hearing from us if you're a patron, a Friends From Work Plus subscriber. We have some episodes for you coming up over the next few weeks or so while we take some time off on the main feed. But the main feed will still be populated with some of our best episodes. Honestly, the X-Men stuff that you're going to hear on the main feed, we felt so good about that's part of the reason that led to this decision. We were like, we kind of want people to hear our take on the X-Men now.
Well, because we just had so much fun.
Much fun. And I had never seen some of them. So that's part of it.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I also, if this is a fun time while we're off, go join our Discord. That's where a lot of folks are talking about this stuff. Like Kyle was saying, I love seeing disagreements there because it's such a reminder that there is a way to do that does not get like really weird and shouty and like turn into ad hominem whatevers. So it's like I this is a great time, as there's a lot of stuff to speculate about and talk about, to go jump in there. And if you are one of our Patreon members, we have some ways for you to submit episode ideas. And I feel like that's another thing that in the coming months, there are a lot of topics that we could easily kill an hour diving into. So this is an invitation for anyone that has anything like that you would like to see an episode on. Feel free to drop it in the drop a line, if you will.
And I know we're breaking a rule that we have behind the scenes. I don't want to tell you everything you can do right now because it can get overwhelming, but I'm going to kind of do that because not only new content, yes, Friends From Work Plus, there's a Discord channel. If you go to the ffwpodcast.com, you can find the link to that Discord channel and or contact forms. Or if you want to go rewatch, like our rewatch order is on there. Our rankings will be updated on there. So that's a good hub too. There's merchandise on there, by the way, like the shirt I'm wearing, which is pretty dope. So you can support us that way. Obviously, just by listening to the podcast, by subscribing, by hanging with us, listening to episodes is the best way to support us. But we also have a YouTube channel where these episodes go on that channel. But I say that now because while we're off on this break, Robbie and I shot a newsroom style under 10 minutes, like six to eight minutes, a summary kind of our X-Men episodes for each X-Men episode as they come out. So we have like, I don't know how many it is, 8 to 10 little 6 to 8 minute videos that are going to be coming out on YouTube in conjunction with the wide release of those X-Men episodes. And those ended up becoming really unique for us and really fun. Like, we're literally sitting at a newsroom desk.
That was
and keeping
fun.
Them really short was challenging, but fun. So you may want to be checking those out too. There will still be new content coming out. Oh, that's a lot. Thank you to Organic Price Books for supporting this podcast. Thank you to all of you for listening. Thank you to Apple and Spotify for promoting this podcast. And we'll see you soon back on here on Friends from Work.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.